Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, listening to the Beatles fade in and out, I'm a little concerned about our technical ability to communicate. Mitchell had to make a medical appointment and will be joining as we proceed. I want to begin with a couple of rather major stories and then turn to other events. And I expect to be taking calls early today. October Harvard Caps Harris poll. Republicans are inching closer toward a wave as they win over voters on inflation, crime, and immigration. Now, the Harris-Harvard poll is generally, in my opinion, highly reliable, but you always want to ask yourself whether it adds up and comports or coheres with everything else you know. And I'd say what we have here does satisfy that desideratum. Thus, I believe this looks pretty good. Let me go through it with you. Republicans are winning the generic congressional ballot 53-47 among likely voters. Okay, that's a 6-point advantage generally across the board. That's quite profound because usually the Democrats have the generic edge even when Republicans actually wind up winning elections. In addition, 55% of Americans blame Biden for inflation, including 42% of the Democrats. Obviously, that's appropriate. This is all generated by Biden's massive spending. We had virtually zilch inflation under Trump. Moreover, Biden's debt relief and marijuana pardons are popular, but don't move the needle electorally for Democrats. They're going all out. They're trying to do everything they can to win over voters, but it's not actually having that effect, even when the programs are popular. Here's the report in detail. New York and Cambridge, Mass. Stagwell today released the results of the October Harvard Caps Harris poll, a monthly collaboration between the Center for American Political Studies at Harvard, Caps, and the Harris poll and Harris X. Republicans are connecting with voters on their key issues of inflation, crime, and immigration. While Americans see Democrats as mostly focused on January 6th, women's rights, and the environment, Biden continues to struggle on the economy, which is the key issue. 84% of Americans think the U.S. is in a recession now, or will be by next year. And 58% are not confident in Biden's ability to hold inflation at bay. Other topics surveyed in this month's poll include voter views on Biden's marijuana pardon and student debt plan, and U.S. foreign policy around oil in Ukraine. Download key results here. I may go back to that. Here I'm sticking with the overview. Republicans are inching back toward a wave election after a summer when abortion seemed to turn the tide, said Mark Penn, co-director of the Harvard Caps Harris Poll and Stagwell chairman and CEO. People are more motivated to vote when they are upset, and the Republicans are capturing voter dissatisfaction on inflation, crime, and immigration. Americans are suffering incredible economic anxiety on top of normal buyer's remorse for the president and his party in a midterm. Republicans are connecting on inflation, crime, and immigration. Republicans are winning the generic congressional ballot 53-47 among likely voters. Inflation, crime, and immigration are the most important issues voters picked heading into the midterm. And based on each voter's say, they are over 10 points more likely to vote Republican than Democrat. Americans think Republican leaders are most concerned with immigration, inflation, and the economy, while Democrat leaders are most concerned with January 6th, women's rights, and the environment. Look how massively they focus on January 6th, which is being discredited in every possible way. They put all their eggs in that basket. Then with the abortion ruling, of course, they sought to capitalize. And yes, while it was at least initially a big deal, I myself, as you all know, believe in a woman's right to choose. But with restrictions, I believe the original Roe v. Wade was properly decided. But I respect the court decision that, in fact, it did not have the jurisdiction to make the ruling within the confines of the Constitution, and that it was a matter that had to be sent back to the states. So far as I can see, even though I believe it would have been in the best interest of the public to have remained in place as a precedent for over 50 years, I have trouble faulting sending it back to the states, even though I think the consequences are adverse, bad, patchwork quilt, rights varying from state to state, imposing massive inconvenience about a woman's right to choose, and so forth. So I think it was a wrong decision, but I respect what they did based upon their interpretation of the Constitution, of which they are the ultimate arbiter. Meanwhile, Americans blame Biden and the Fed for inflation. 55% of Americans blame Biden for inflation, including 42% of Democrats. 58% are not confident in the Biden administration ability to keep inflation at bay. Americans are worried about the Fed. 74% think the Fed will cause a recession. 84% think the U.S. is in a recession now or will be in one by next year. I think it's pretty tough to fault this analysis. It seems to me to be spot on. It's very odd that in all the years, you know, say I've been residing here in Wisconsin, I've only very intermittently been called to participate in a poll. And yet this year, oddly enough, I've been called 5 times to participate in polls. And typically, they don't identify the pollster in question, but it could be that I even was involved in this Harvard-Harris poll. In any case, I mean, I think the pollsters are trying to do a better job after their embarrassments of the past. And of course, we have still a lot of polls. Nate Silver is an example, but there are a host of others that seem to me to be utterly biased. They're giving us phony numbers. They have no legitimate foundation for what they're doing. As in the case of Hillary's campaign in 2016, they're oversampling Democrats, they're oversampling women, they're oversampling self-declared progressives, and they're getting skewed outcomes. That was all set up to make it look as though there was terrific public support for Hillary when they stole the election for Hillary. And yes, I guarantee 100% it was rigged for Hillary. It was only because rural areas turned out in massive numbers to support Trump, where they were unable to control it. That's why he won in 2016, even though the election was rigged for Hillary. And that's part of the reason she was so distraught. She thought she had it in the bag. And Hillary's a very vindictive person. And I have no doubt she's been behind not only the Russiagate and all this other happy horseshit attacking Trump, Obama too. I mean, it's just disgusting how these Democrats have politicized Department of Justice and the FBI to the disgrace of the American Republic. Our standing internationally has fallen precipitously, where we now can no longer claim to be maintain law and order independent of political orientation. We can no longer maintain equal justice under the law, as the 14th Amendment declares. We have reduced ourselves to the level of a banana republic by weaponizing the FBI and the DOJ to go after our political opponents. This is what you expect in Venezuela, or Guatemala, or Nicaragua, or you name it, any of these banana republics, that's what they do. This is something the United States has condemned for decade upon decade upon decade, even while we were undertaking coups and assassinations in foreign nations. It's all catching up with us. Like the Pogo cartoon, we have met the enemy, and it is us. Meanwhile, Biden's debt relief and marijuana pardon policies are popular, but don't move the needle electorally. Very significant. 67% approve of Biden's marijuana pardon, but it has no net effect on the electorate. 36% of voters say it makes them more likely to vote Republican. 35% more likely to vote Democrat. It's a similar story for Biden's student loan debt. 58% support the act, but 41% say it's made them more likely to vote Republican compared to 35% Democrat. 41% say it's made them more likely to vote Republican compared to 35% more likely to vote Democrat. I think there's a lot of resentment out there. People who paid their debts, who slaved to pay off their student debts, put themselves through college, all that, are resentful. It's like the Latino community, resentful of the open borders, rolling out the red carpet, giving these illegal migrants green cards, places to stay, money, driver's licenses. It is a disgrace, and they resent it. And you have Latinos turning Republican at a faster rate than any other group that the Democrats have counted on forever, along with blacks. Remember, how often have I reported the Rasmussen poll before the 2020 election, showing that 40% of black likely voters were going to vote for Trump because he had actually improved their lives. By clamping down on the border, he ensured that the lowest earning wage earners would see their wages rise at the highest rate. I mean, people who claim there are no differences between the Democrats and the Republicans, frankly, are just have their head where the sun doesn't shine. It's so embarrassing. Closed borders, energy independence, calling out the fake news, surging economy, virtually zero inflation, no wars. Does anyone think there's an equivalence between Trump and Biden on any of those scores? I mean, honest to God, pull your head out of your ass. This is real. And those who think in a misconceived way that not voting is a good idea to show your protest. Forget it. This is the most important midterm in the history of the Republic. We are going down fast. How many more millions of illegals do you want to flood into the United States? Remember, today's migrants are tomorrow's Democrats. That's how they're viewing it. And given the decimation of the military by the vax, I'm convinced they're recruiting a lot of these young men into the U.S. military, promising them citizenship in the knowledge that they, unlike Americans, will be willing to fire on other American citizens. I mean, it's just disgusting what's going on here right before our very eyes. People say Trump and Biden are the same, that there's no difference between these parties. Spare me. The differences are profound. I'll grant in the old establishment Republican Party, there was much less difference. Remember, Trump is an anti-establishmentarianism. He came in and executed a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. A hostile takeover. Even Mitch McConnell has expressed very negative attitudes about Donald Trump, which is moronic. Here you got the majority leader or then majority leader of the Senate, the key Republican in the Senate, denigrating the most popular Democrat president maybe in all of history, if you look in terms of absolute votes. I mean, Jack would have won an overwhelming majority in 64, but he never had the chance. Lyndon saw to that. He wanted to become president of all the people. He orchestrated the assassination of John F. Kennedy on 22 November 1963. If you have any doubts about it, take a look. Go to my YouTube channel, Jim Fetzer, and in the search bar, just look for JFK Special, which I dedicated to Oliver Stone and released on the 18th of November of last year, knowing he was going to release is JFK Revisited on the 22nd. So I wanted to be sure no one had any doubt these were totally separate enterprises. And where I sent him a copy. My God, if he'd only gone the right way, if he'd only, say, chosen me and all of my colleagues to advise, he would have had a film worth watching. His JFK Revisited is ridiculous. It's all about the magic bullet. He doesn't even understand that was one of the Secret Service agents who found this whole bullet on the floor of the limousine and took it inside and put it on a stretcher, which turned out to be the magic bullet that's so touted. He didn't even know that. When he interviewed both David Manning, who's demonstrated the magic bullet trajectory isn't even anatomically possible, by taking a patient with similar chest and neck dimension and plotting the trajectory and discovering cervical vertebrae intervene, it's not even anatomically possible. Although he interviewed David Manning, he didn't present that proof. I mean, what's wrong with Oliver Stone that he has his head up his butt? And he had Doug Horn on, too. Doug Horn and David Manning are among the six most expert in the world. Doug Horn especially, he was a senior analyst for military records on the Assassination Records Review Board. He's done a five-part magnificent review of what they actually discovered, most of which the American people don't understand. He was especially good at discovering exactly how the whole movie, the Zapruder film, was taken originally to the National Photographic Interpretation Center on Saturday the 23rd. Where a briefing board was prepared for the actual sequence of shots where JFK was hit at least four times, once in the throat from in front, once in the back from behind, once in the back of the head from behind, and then in the right temple from in front, where David now believes there may have been yet an additional virtually simultaneous shot also from the right, where they had the original film there on Saturday and prepared a briefing board, and then a whole different team was working Sunday when a person who identified himself as a Secret Service agent by the name of William Smith brought a substitute, an alternative copy from Rochester that had been edited at the CIA secret film lab there called Hawkeye Works, which David Lifton first exposed in his magnificent book, Best Evidence, 1980, which I regard as the single most important book ever published in the history of the assassination, where I regard my books, where I brought together the best experts to ever study the case, Assassination Science, 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza, 2000, and The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, 2003, as sequels to Lifton's magnificent work. But he was like putting his finger on the Zapruder film having been edited, the role of Hawkeye Works, other issues that there was two shots had been conflated, the shot to the back of the head, Jack slumps forward, Jackie eases him back up, then he's hitting the right temple, he slumps to the left, Jackie climbs out the back. They merge those two. Something that was very clear, by the way, in Josiah Thompson's 6 Seconds in Dallas, that was the single best aspect of his book, The Double Hit Theory, which he has subsequently disavowed. And where at the end of the book, which reeks with proof of conspiracy, he claims none of this proves there was a conspiracy, when in fact a whole lot of it proved there was a conspiracy, leading Vincent Salandria, among the most brilliant of the early generation JFK students, to call him out as an op, as a phony, as a fraud. I was in the Marine Corps when Jack was whacked, anchored out aboard LPHE with Jima in Kaohsiung Harbor, Formosa, when I was awakened by the officer of the deck at 3:30 in the morning to tell me JFK had been shot. Then awakened me an hour later to tell me they caught the guy, done it, he was a communist. I thought then that was pretty fast work. Today I know why. A total frame job. Lee Oswald was standing in the doorway of the book depository when the motorcade came by. He not only cannot have been the lone demented gunman, he cannot have been one of the multiple shooters, of whom I and Ole Domegaard have identified eight. Eight! Where it appears each of the sponsors of the assassination, including the CIA, the Joint Chiefs, the Mafia, the anti-Castro Cubans, the Fed, Israel, Texas oilmen, each put up their own gunmen. Even Lyndon had his own personal hitman. Malcolm Mack Wallace participated in the assassination, where Malcolm assassinated, murdered a dozen people for Lyndon, including one of his own sisters, because she talked too much. God, how we have been played. More. Harris Harvard. American lead toward hawkish foreign policy on oil in Russia. 65% oppose easing sanctions on countries like Iran and Venezuela as a way to lower gas and oil prices. Instead, they want greater output of American oil and gas. Think Trump, energy independent. Think Biden canceling XL pipeline, first act in office. And you tell me there's no difference between the parties? 54% think the U.S. should cut military sales and tactical aid to the Saudi Arabian government in response for the oil production cut. Well, what do the Saudis owe the United States? Biden goes there to kiss their ass. How humiliating is that? Saudi Arabia is one of the countries with the worst human rights records, especially for women's rights, in the world. And Biden, who represents a Democrat, supposed to be a great champion of women's rights, goes to Saudi Arabia to kiss their butts? Give me a break. How dumb are we supposed to be? No difference between the parties? Voters are split on whether or not Biden's policies on Ukraine are pushing us toward nuclear war, and a majority remain supportive of providing aid to Ukraine. Just showing we're pretty slow to learn what the hell's going on with regard to foreign policy. If Russia uses a nuclear weapon on Ukraine, 58% of Americans are willing to send in NATO. Well, let me tell you, Russia's not going to use a nuclear weapon on Ukraine. If Russia is forced to retaliate, it's going to be massive, and it is not going to be limited to Ukraine. Russia's already spoken about cities that would be hit. Number one on the list, London. That may sound peculiar if you don't follow these matters in some detail. But Muammar Gaddafi, who in spite of his demonization by the American media, was a great humanitarian, shared the Libyan oil wealth with the people of Libya, national health care, national public education, $25,000 to couples who are newly married, introducing the great waterworks project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis, and the gold dinar, which would have rapidly become the currency of all of Africa. He had to be taken out. That was too much independence. He wouldn't subscribe to a Rothschild bank. Why not? Because in Islam, usury, or making money off of money, interest, is eschewed. It's forbidden. So the Rothschilds have had a great problem with Muslim countries. When I learned that the rebel group in Libya, their first act was to found a new central bank, I knew something was terribly, terribly wrong. If Russia has to retaliate, it's going to be massive. Gaddafi observed that if you want to end international terrorism, just lob a cruise missile into the city of London, the one square mile independent entity at the very heart of London, where I visited seven times. London's my favorite city of all the nations of the world, and I visited quite a few. But this is outrageous. This is ridiculous. And again, I say, if Russia has to retaliate, they've launched this doomsday submarine that has all these little mini nuclear-packed submersibles, call them underwater drones, that are capable of detonating, causing massive tsunamis. If Russia has to retaliate, you can expect massive tsunamis that take out the East Coast and even the West of the United States. And remember, this water is radioactive. It means, for example, New York City will be uninhabitable for the next 250 years. Think about it. Biden's pushing for war. Trump sought to avoid it. Biden's being antagonistic toward Russia. Trump wanted to be friends with Russia, but he was beat up. Anyone who tells me there's no difference between these parties has their head where the sun doesn't shine. Get real. Get real.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I think the Harris-Harvard poll has got it right, and I hope everyone is thinking about those contrasts between the Republican Party of Donald Trump and the Democrat Party under Biden. And by the way, Megyn Kelly has had an interesting observation that those who are supporting Trump are not going to go to DeSantis, that their loyalty to Trump is very deep and profound. And I believe that, in spite of his flaws. No one's suggesting Donald Trump does not have serious flaws, some of which I find highly objectionable. The question is, what guy, if he were back in office, could do the most to set the ship of state right? And I'm convinced Donald Trump knows how to do it. Those of you who have followed his Schedule F recognize he's even devised a plan to make it possible to fire members of the special executive service, colloquially known as the deep state, which is somewhere between 15 and 17,000 permanent or semi-permanent employees of the American government who make all kinds of decisions as unelected bureaucrats, who've been an ongoing problem, a chronic problem for the American government. And remember how often he's devised a Schedule F that's going to enable him to fire these people, which has never before been possible. I'm convinced that a whole lot of orders that Trump issued as president were never carried out. Even Bill Barr turns out to be a real bastard, a real duplicitous bastard who double-teamed Trump. He deceived him. He lied to him. Then he came out and claimed there was no evidence that there had been any theft of the election in 2020 without doing any investigation, no doubt because he knew damn well there had been massive fraud. He had these double dealing bastard surrounding him unknowingly. My God, if it even turns out that Ivanka was working to undermine her own father. Unbelievable. In any case, Trump is flawed, but in spite of that, and the two major, as I see it, really are his being played over the vax and then continuing to take credit for it. That's absurd. The vax is bad. It's a bioweapon. It's intended to maim or kill you. Apparently, of course, there are different batches, some of which are really toxic, others of which are not. And it has delayed effects. It makes multiple adverse impact on your immune system. So if you had a predisposition to cancer, for example, because it reduces immunity, that may allow that predisposition to be manifest rapidly when it would not have absent the vax. Or if you had a tendency toward arterial sclerosis, again, it's going to promote it. In fact, it's given us a history of myocarditis, which is inflammation of the sac surrounding the heart. So serious that we have these young athletes at the prime of their life dropping dead on the soccer field, for example. Stunning stuff. I really want Trump to renounce, acknowledge this was a colossal blunder. Over and beyond, obviously, he has kissed Israel's ass too often. If I fault Biden for kissing Saudi Arabia's ass, I certainly am faulting Trump for kissing Israel's ass. We have a mega problem with Israel because it's so dominant in American media and government. Jews make up a tiny proportion of the American population, but they're overwhelmingly represented in cabinets and high administrative positions in government and the media. Virtually total control. Hollywood, virtually total control. Americans really don't get objective news from any but the alternative news outlets, even including right here, Revolution Radio. I mean, that's why they're going to go so far as they can to suppress it, stomp it out. Even they've even enlisted the not just the big media giants, Twitter, Google, Facebook, YouTube, massive campaigns of censorship, absolutely staggering. There was a golden era there about 15 years. I would guess from around 1990 to around 2005, when you really couldn't find everything there was anyone had ever said about any topic, you could just go on to a search. All kinds of stuff, all kinds of topic, every point of view. That's the way it should be. Let a thousand flowers bloom. Let everyone have their say. And then through the process of deliberation, debate, additional research, evidence gathering, let's sort out the difference between the true and the false. As Sir Karl Popper, the great British philosopher of science, emphasized, rational debate and criticism is our most effective method to discovering truth, but it must be unfettered. It cannot be censored. You cannot allow only one point of view to prevail. You must allow all points of view. And you have to take into account all the relevant evidence, not just a predetermined subset. You must not apply the method known as special pleading, which is only to cite only the evidence favorable to your side and then ignore the rest, which is also known as the method of selection and elimination. Select the evidence you like and eliminate the rest. That's what these politicians do. This is what Washington doing. That's what the January 6th committee is doing. It's so obvious and so blatant. No one with a functioning brain can think that January 6th is an objective inquiry. It's much more obvious and blatant than were its precursors with the 9/11 commission, which was a total whitewash. Much less the Warren Commission. I mean, look, there were actually eight shooters. George H.W. Bush, Edward Lansing were on the ground supervising the event. LBJ was a mastermind. I'm telling you, once he became president, you see, appointed the FBI as a sole investigative source, and because he and Edgar were tied, they lived adjacent to one another. Edgar was a godfather to one of Lyndon's daughters. They both hated the Kennedys. when they shifted the evidence from Dallas to Washington, D.C., which was totally unnecessary, in my opinion, in a broad way. They made substitutions. They switched the Mannlicher Carcano. They switched the handgun. Bah, bah, bah. Edgar was right in there pitching, and the history of the disgrace since that time has been deplorable. Deplorable. Lyndon was the one person who, because he was becoming president, could guarantee that no one would ever be punished for participating in the assassination of his predecessor. And he made good on that promise. With the exception of Jim Garrison, who was a very vigilant, very smart guy. Garrison, by the way, knew Lee Oswald had been standing in the doorway of the book depository and therefore cannot have been complicit in the as an actual shooter in the assassination. Was on a fringe, so they had to stamp him out. This is like they sought to stamp me out when I'm seeking to expose Sandy Hook, which turns out to be a mega event. This is huge. The fact they're going to all this trouble to broadcast all these absurd trials for damages with Alex Jones. In fact, in no case has there been a determination by the jury that anybody died at Sandy Hook. That juries have never had the opportunity to evaluate the evidence and conflicting the disputed facts of the matter to sort out what really happened. That's all by design. It's all intentional. This thing goes way back. The more I learn, the more massive. I'm simply overwhelmed with the extent, the breadth, the depth, the preparation of Sandy Hook. This was a community event. They had a school in disrepair. They wanted to replace it. They didn't want to pay for it. They got all kinds of benefits. You know, among the other fringe, they got $50 million to build a new school. They didn't even need it. The demographics of Newtown were such they had more schools than they needed. I mean, I'm telling you, this is grotesque. And the federal government was managing this event from beginning to end. Well, that's where Alex comes in, right? I mean, he's thought to be the biggest conspiracy theorist of them all, right? He got an enormous platform. I only wish he were just a tad better at doing what he does. He's clearly compromised. He won't talk about Israel, which is our major problem. I mean, how many times do I explain how they completely dominate the mainstream media? I speak less about Hollywood, but it's very blatant and obvious there, too. We had a Jewish reporter in Hollywood years ago. I think you can still find it. Do Jews control Hollywood? Of course. And he went through all the major studios. And with one exception, I believe it was United Artists, which was actually founded by actors and actresses. Every single one of the studios, and at the time there were about a dozen, had Jewish owners and directors and presidents, every single one. And we still get endless propaganda in support of traditional Jewish or Zionist themes, Schindler's List, The Reader, Sophie's Choice, all this stuff about the Holocaust, all completely exaggerated. Those were actually labor camps. They did use Zycon B to delouse the inmates, because the body lice were spraying typhus and dysentery. They wanted to maintain their health because you can't get work out of a corpse. The International Committee of the Red Cross, in its when it recalibrated its figures, it was keeping extensive records of the sex, the age, the race, the ethnicity, the religion, and the cause of death of every single inmate in all the camps. In 1993, they recalibrated the number and the total, the grand total. All deaths in all the camps, from all causes. 296,081, none of whom died from being put to death in a gas chamber. None. In fact, there weren't even any gas chambers there. I mean, I'm telling you, the power of propaganda is so immense. Sandy Hook is falling in the same category as the Holocaust, and it's taboo to discuss or criticize. Going after Alex Jones in this massive way is really trying to destroy anyone who wants to contest one of the official narratives advanced by the government or state, at the state or local level, all in complicity, mind you, whether it's Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, Las Vegas, Buffalo, Uvalde. I mean, it's embarrassingly bad. Anyone who wants to dig into this, check out my law enforcement false flag staged event checklist, co-authored with Brian Davidson, a private investigator from Texas, brilliant guy who's done absolutely sensational work on Sandy Hook, on Buffalo, on Uvalde. At Sandy Hook, he got into the Connecticut State Police files and discovered a treasure trove of photographs. Down the hallway where there's supposed to be two bodies, there's nothing, not a speck of blood. In classroom 10, where there's supposed to be a pile of bodies, nothing, not a speck of blood. No pockmarks on the walls. No blood on the floor. And guess what? The state police have removed the metadata from the photograph, so you do not know exactly on what date, what occasion, and I believe it would even include what location they were taken, but they're all from inside the elementary school, or what was presented to us as an elementary school. More about that by and by. But it appears that Connecticut State Police were running the event behind the scene with the complicity of the federal government. The governor himself of Connecticut was involved, Daniel Malloy. And it's all disgusting beyond belief. It's becoming. And he set up Alex Jones to set an example that this is what can happen to you if you question or challenge any of these official narratives. I mean, talk about propaganda. Talk about your show trials. Now, it's interesting that I was just sent this morning a story from Rents by Yoshi Shimatsu, who's a pretty brilliant guy that Rents regularly features. He and I actually were collaborating for, I don't know, about a year and a half. I was doing shows on Rents. He was featuring me on his own shows. We got along pretty well, but it was expensive. I've done what? I don't know, 10 different radio shows. Rents is the only one where you had to pay to be a host on Rents, and it was a nickel and a dime. And I just couldn't afford to do it anymore. So I came here to Revolution Radio from Rents because I just couldn't afford it. I mean, I'm not a wealthy man. I mean, if they have a, you know, 1.1 million lien on me. I mean, if I had it, they'd take it, believe me. But your home is covered, you know, between your mortgage and your entitlement. They can't take your home. My such income as I have from a modest investment account came from my retirement. They can't take that. Social Security, they can't take that. We have a recreational trailer, in-ground trailer with a screened-in porch out by Rock Lake and Lake Mills that I originally paid $60,000 for. Jen loves it. It was wonderful for many years. But when the kids or grandkids were younger, we'd spend all kinds of time out there, less so recently. They tried to take that. Put it up for sale, a sheriff auction, but no one bid. It was at $30,000. Half would have gone to Jan and half to them, my part. Well, after Rents and I parted, it was a point, too, where I was disagreeing with him in Las Vegas. Las Vegas was an enormous false flag. You want to talk about the role of the FBI? The crowd there at the concert was infiltrated by as many as 500 crisis actors hired by Crowds on Demand out of Los Angeles. All the alleged decedents were fake. They were phony. Mona Alexis Presley did brilliant research discovering that when they weren't simply Photoshop variations of one another, same party, same decedent represented twice, they were based on persons who died in different states on different dates or from different causes of death. It was all a total sham, and the FBI was there. And when bystanders who were innocent and thought it was real gave them their cell phones and their laptops to take off the video or photographs they'd taken, what did the FBI do? Wipe them clean. Wipe them clean. That was the FBI contribution to investigating Las Vegas. All these are scare tactics. It originated with Obama, so far as I can tell, who, as you well know, nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States that heretofore had only been allowed without, by the Smith Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring a Sandy Hook, legitimizing all the phony stage event. And the participants, the cities, the whole communities are involved. They're paid big bucks to do this rubbish, and it's carefully set up. They're trained, they're selected, they are interviewed for the roles, they're cast. It's as though it were a Hollywood production. And in Parkland, I'm rather stunned. Governor DeSantis doesn't seem to understand that Parkland was analogous, because 3,500 students at Parkland were let go early at 1 o'clock because it was a holiday, Valentine's Day. And they only kept behind about three dozen. Actually, David Hogg admitted there in an interview he gave 6 hours after appearing at the March for Our Lives, which was about 6 weeks after, where it turns out to have an event in Washington, D.C. that involves road closures. You have to submit a permit request 6 months in advance. So back in October, November, they were submitting an application for the March for Our Lives that was ostensibly predicated on the Parkland shooting, and we've verified all of this. And that's a benefit of collaborative research. You can cover a lot of ground when you have a group of investigators who are trying to sort things out as opposed to one person. There are only so many hours in a single day. Just think about it. If you've got a task that would take 100 man hours of work for one person, if you had 10, that's only 10 hours of work times 10. If you had 100, that's only 1 hour of work for 100, roughly speaking. So when I bring together these groups of experts, it has all kinds of cost-benefit consequences and enables us more or less to check one another's work and dramatically reduce the probability of making mistakes. I have participants in the exercise at Sandy Hook giving the book a 99% accuracy rating. And they were involved, 99%. No wonder the government wants to suppress it. No wonder they brought a lawsuit against me. No wonder they're demonizing, trying to make it unavailable everywhere, coming after me with these absurd judicial proceedings that are completely unreasonable, and where I cannot begin to tell you how distraught I am. That when I serve it up as on a plate for the Supreme Court to knock it out of the park, because this case involves an abusive summary judgment proceeding in the whole state of Wisconsin, I'm merely an example. The summary judgment procedure in Wisconsin allows a judge to decide on the facts without sending to a jury. If he thinks it's not reasonable, he just sets it aside. It was astonishing when I read the Court of Appeals decision. In consecutive paragraphs, the Court of Appeals said it is reasonable to believe Adam Lanza shot his mother, then went to Sandy Hook, shot 20 kids, 6 adults, blah, 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 blah. Even including the claim, Niels Heslin claimed that he held his son Jesse in his arms as he died, which is a blatant contradiction with Wayne Carver's report that they did not allow the parents to come into contact with the children. Well, if the parents weren't allowed to come into contact with the children, how was Neil Heslin able to hold his son in his arms as he died? He wasn't. They can't both be true. They can both be false. I guarantee 100% they're both false, except, of course, the parents weren't allowed because the parents were phony and there weren't any dead children for them to see anyway or come in contact with. I mean, it's embarrassingly bad. So Jeff Rentz and I had a good relationship. We had a kind of a falling out over Las Vegas. He seemed to think somehow it would have been a real shooting. Somehow the Saudi Arabians had been involved. I mean, it's kind of weird. But if you go to Rentz, you'll be able to track it down because he's made, you know, a big deal. And he's attacked me ever since, even though we were, as it were, fast friends and colleagues, up to the point where I declared I could, you know, I was going to switch to Revolution Radio. Well, a guy he's got who's pretty good is Yoshi Shimazu. And Yoshi, I was sent just before coming on the air, a piece that appeared on the 14th, just a couple days ago. Alex Jones' disinfo war is to expire 10 years after the Sandy Hook shooting. Now, I've not read this before, but I want to share it with you and comment on it, because if I tended to believe Alex Jones was doing a good job in drawing attention to situations that were anomalous, disturbing. He's been pretty good as an early warning sign. Then he's also been good at speculation, bringing in commentators on this or that to offer their alternative views. He's been quite good at that. I think this is part of why he gets a big audience. He's actually talking about important subjects and making important points. Where he's not as good, and this is a major difference between him and me, is in following through, sorting out the difference between the fabricated and the authentic evidence, and determining on the basis of the application of the principles of abductive reasoning, which proceed as follows. Assume the hypothesis is true. What's the probability then of the available evidence on the assumption the hypothesis was true? What's the probability, for example, of there being a FEMA manual for an event at Sandy Hook on the same dates, and even confirmation from the Connecticut FEMA outfit that they were conducting a drill at Sandy Hook that day, if it were a real shooting event? Zero. What's the probability, however, if it was a stage event, that we'd have the manual, that events on the ground would correspond to the events that occur when you have a FEMA exercise, and that we'd have further confirmation from the Connecticut branch of FEMA? Close to one. Well, if you then these technically are known as likelihoods. I mean, that's a common measure used in empirical research in the social sciences, especially likelihoods. Which hypothesis then is more likely is a better supported, and that goes all the way with it having been a stage event. More on Alex when we return.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites.
The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
By the way, having been rebuffed by the Supreme Court, I'm now returning to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. Hopefully, I'll get a more reasonable response from them this time. I explained what they said it was reasonable to believe, and in a consecutive paragraph, they said it's unreasonable to believe that it was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Bah, 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 in spite of the massive, but right there in the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, they're confirming this methodology in Wisconsin that I set up for the Supreme Court to set right and then make uniform standards for summary judgment across the country. I've been informed by a guy in Massachusetts that Massachusetts has a similar summary judgment protocol to Wisconsin. Well, that's terrible because it means a judge is able to make up the facts, to decide the facts without a jury. Under the law, the juries are supposed to decide the facts, not the judge. The whole idea of summary judgment was to circumvent the time, expense, and effort to form a jury if there are no disputed facts. And then the judge simply applies the law. That's the role of the judge, to apply the law, role of the jury is to resolve the facts. But in this case, there were only no undisputed facts when they could not have been more in opposition because the judge simply ruled that all my facts were unreasonable and therefore there were no undisputed facts. I mean, how bad is that? And you think the Supreme Court didn't see that? The Supreme Court did not act properly in this case. And that means something is wrong. Well, what do we got here? What about Alex? What does Yoshi have to say? As I said, this is my first reading, but I'm glad to share my thoughts. Nearly a billion in fines for libel in the Sandy Hook school shooting case will presumably end the reign of error of Alex Jones, the bombastic host of the InfoWar news site. His denouncement at three trials, one lasting 9 days, will presume it in a Texas courtroom was distasteful, as a remorseless Jones, devoid of empathy, stared at his accusers in bewilderment and then rang the prosecutor, who bellowed back tit for tat at the bleary-eyed defendant while parents tried to hold back tears for their lost children. My God! He doesn't know what happened at Sandy Hook. He says, if their grief was crisis acting, which it was, the distraught families that serve an Academy Award for Best Supporting Cast. Yoshi, you got your head where the sun doesn't shine. The trials left me as a rabble-rousing online journalist in support of InfoWars' right to critical opinion on nationally important events, troubled and depressed about the collapse of First Amendment rights under the politically correct but socially deviant federal regime that's moving toward a decadent queer tyranny similar to the most oppressive monarchies of past centuries that dooms America to chronic failure and defeat. Push has come to shove, and as in the Capitol protest outcome, liberty is being shoved off a cliff. Although I have qualms about Jones' rhetorical style or lack thereof, he's a Texan, not much different than that yelping cowboy at a roundup in Rawhide. Upon receiving the verdict, his defiant stare of cold emotional indifference was from a different era, a holdover of a Cold War prisoner's disdain for a Soviet-style show trial for the purpose of political propaganda, reminiscent of Moscow's taunting of the captured U-2 pilot Gary Powers or the plight of cow dissidents on their sentencing to Siberian exile. The taunting of a cornered Mr. Jones in a shore trial worthy of the Stalin terror, if anything, confirmed his paranoid accusation that crisis actors were posing as victims to enable the deep state to openly crush dissent. Robert Ludlum, author of the Jason Byrne series, who cut his teeth on stage writing for CIA-funded dramas, would have appreciated the trial hysterics. This is such a mixed bag. Questions and more questions. How could it have been possible, I wonder, for anyone with such a strong-headed lack of empathy or even rudimentary eloquence could have run an online media site with up to 80 employees at its height of fame and supposedly millions of viewers? Where did his investment funding come from? What is the net income of InfoWars that investors would continue to pump money into it as if it were the Tesla of mass media or even a Peloton pumping furiously but going nowhere? Rich wives don't coddle their spouses' whim when it is normally wealthy men who must humor their trophy wives. Who the hell is behind the cult figure Alex Jones? Now this, it's funny. He's calling it a show trial. He's talking about the damage it's doing to freedom of speech, the destruction it's doing to the United States, yet he seems to be whipping Alex Jones. Mulling over these doubts of whether anything is real about InfoWars and its choir of harsh critics, as in, are we being set up for a fall? A cynical sort of realism set over my brain lobes, telling me that maybe he's in the only person seeing things as they really are, that it's all just a theater of the absurd. Somebody invests in his circus because it satisfies a sadomasochistic addiction to sensational horrors. Online news can be a sick game indeed, and especially in this age of TikTok. People who are publicity addicts are ready to be pumped up with drugs to play an assigned role, even if it kills them. If so, then what about the children slated to be slaughtered in a stage crisis? Are they also zombies swept by Disney handlers? Are merely doped up fresh meat shipped in from China Lake or Boys Town? When one considers the thousands of young poseurs with tattooed eyebrows and inflated lips on TikTok and Facebook, well, Andy Warhol was right about 20 minutes a frame. Nowadays, even infamy will do for a thrill, as in new scenes of strutting gangsters who just shot a girlfriend. Wasn't there a cult-like craze for posting your suicide online? Okay. So the trial of Alex Jones is acceptable as grotesque entertainment and therefore invalid as incitement to public rebellion, which requires sobriety and clear objectives. Meanwhile, in Connecticut, plaintiffs sued Jones' company, Free Speech Systems, for violating that state's Unfair Trade Practices Act, arguing that he profited from the lies he told about the plaintiffs and the shooting on his InfoWars show. I must object, since it's nearly impossible to connect a single specific news event to a site's income-earning activities from advertising to T-shirt sales. But, of course, that's small peanuts compared to the court-approved penalty. In Orwellian 2022, the date says it all when it adds up to six, as in 666. The alternative media will be a hollower space without the raging Texan who drew audiences like a buckaroo on an angry longhorn at a rodeo. The rising dust and bullcrap left a bad odor in the nose and mouth, gagging for a slug of Listerine in a bandana when you knew along that a fix was in with an injection that would calm the beast in exactly 30 seconds. The suppression of the least dissent or advocacy of rough-and-tumble politics is obviously a preemptive strike against the freedom of assembly along the lines of the Jacksonian Revolution. The legal assault on InfoWars for heresy, along with the Stalinistic media demonization of the Capitol Hill protesters, gives me shudders about the sinister agenda of the high bureaucrats and their thought police. As Camus put it, there is always hope, but not for us. By us, the existentialist author meant realists who have to operate in the given situation, no matter how favorable or adverse, meaning taking unthinkable risks in defense of liberty and justice. To put the present circumstances under a microscope, inside the bureaucracy, there do survive a few insiders who are worried that rigor mortis is gripping the system, meaning that the body politic needs to be shaken, not just stirred. Or else the continuing political lockdown would mean the fossilization of the USA, as happened to the Soviet Union in the 1980s. Unlike the hardy Russians, the tamer Americans cannot survive a perestroika of hunger and deprivation that's already begun with higher prices for gas and food. That explains the bellicose resistance of an Alex Jones, the insider's troublemaker trying to awaken a nation that's fast asleep under an overdose of meds, vaccines, and political correctness. Gee, I agree with so much of this. Yet I am unhappy to say that the courtroom scene showed grimly that he's yet another prophet who has failed. The trials are ominous because the longer that a return to free thinking is delayed, the greater the destruction incurred. National revival can be either heroically swift or tiresomely brutal, as seen in the difference between the solid and compact American Revolution versus the repeated revision to authoritarianism in France following Bastille Day. If the transition back to popular democracy is blocked and delayed too long, that's when the guillotines are rolled out in front of the Capitol building to punish the arrogant bureaucrats who will finally realize they've lost, and not only their heads. By the way, I used to think that execution by guillotine was the most humane, until I learned of late that, in fact, once your head's decapitated from your body, you remain conscious for 7 or 8 minutes. That's pretty gruesome. Further below, I examine that intriguing online claim of Alex Jones serving as a propaganda agent for the Israelis based on his first wife's Jewish heritage, second to. That tenuous connection never got the traction that it may have deserved, being overshadowed by the bizarre Judeo-coterie surrounding Jared Kushner and Ivanka. So if there is a hidden hand behind Alex Jones slipping him the cash so the show goes on, who is his daddy Warbucks? Before that, a revisit to Sandy Gore's is demanded by soon arrival of the decade anniversary. So here we're going to get his take on Sandy Hook. The guy, whom I've never met, certainly writes well. He has a mastery of language, very well written, and I certainly agree with a whole lot of it. But let's see what happens now. And of course, Alec does not talk about Israel, its domination of the American media, or its role in 9/11 and the like. So I'm far from the only who has believed that in that respect, at least, Alex Jones was a limited hangout. I would remind you, however, though, that when he held his American Scholars Conference in 2006 in June in Los Angeles, he invited me to be the keynote speaker. This was on 9/11. Having founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth, I got brought together experts by the hundreds from all around the world to engage in collaborative efforts, publishing articles, promoting lectures, videos, keeping a kind of timeline, research developments all over the world. He invited me to be the keynote speaker, and during the panel discussion that occurred the following day, which was recorded by C-SPAN, ran an hour and 45, all four of the panel participants were members of Scholars. So I certainly felt he did the right thing on that occasion and have borne him no ill will, though I must say, during his video deposition in Connecticut, he declared that he'd never read Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which is bizarre. I mean, if you're going to take a stand on such a complex, controversial event, why not consult the only objective book where I brought together 13 experts, including six PhDs, to sort out what really happened? Sandy Hook anniversary. And by the way, I'm sure I've mentioned it before, I offered to be an expert witness to Norm Pattis, who is his attorney, to explain why there was good reason why he might have sincerely believed what he was saying on those few occasions when he denied that Sandy Hook had been real. For the most part, Alex was right in their pitching that it had been a bona fide, authentic event where 20 kids and six adults had died. Let's see what Shimatsu has to say. Sandy Hook anniversary. The eighth day before Christmas, December 17th, will mark the 10th anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, which resulted in the deaths of 20 children and six adults. That's if serious credence is not given to the crisis actor claims. The coming anniversary explains the rush to put Alex Jones on trial this past week as how a turkey shoot heralds the holiday festivities. As in this past summer's spate of lone gun boy shootings, Adam Lanza, 20, who lived up the road from the school, was the alleged shooter. As a former student, the official narrative claims he knew how to get through the security precautions, which were installed after he graduated, however. He allegedly had shot his mother in the family home to unlock the gun rack, retrieving an AR-15 and two semi-automatic handguns. Immediately after his role in the school massacre, he committed suicide. That ending is just too neat, especially when considering press entry into his home was not permitted. At the time, I wrote a series of probing articles on the Sandy Hook affair for Rents.com, taking a depth background approach as opposed to the mainstream media's superficial treatment or the cynical post 9/11 skepticism of Alex Jones and James Fetzer, the latter whose online posts on crisis actors were silenced by not so veiled threats of legal action by politically correct whisperers instead of suppression. I wonder then, what if they're right about crisis actors with hardly any credible evidence ready in the botched investigation, which was also purposely sabotaged to protect the DHS from criticism? No possibility should have been rejected. I wonder if Sochi has even read Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. DHS and Israeli Shin Bet connections. To the cut to the quick of my finding back then, Sandy Hook was the first school in the USA to adopt the security guidelines of the newly created Department of Homeland Security, our nation's belated response to the WTC's spectacle. Newtown, Connecticut was chosen because the then senior senator from Connecticut, Joe Lieberman, was one of the chief sponsors of the anti-terrorism bill that created the DHS during the Bush and Obama administrations. This, of course, was part of what was effectuated by the Patriot Act, grossly misnamed since it essentially took 35 agencies and reassembled them into a mammoth organization more closely resembling the East German Stasi than any we'd ever had in government before. Among the targets taken for hostage seizures in Zionist-occupied Palestine, a.k.a. Israel, primary schools were favored by Randall Palestinian and Shin Bin, by the way, I missed. In the wake of 9/11, the hardcore Zionist Lieberman enlisted the Israeli domestic security program Shin Bin as a model for a proactive DHS. Shin Bin is a domestic anti-terrorism unit equivalent to the more notorious Mossad, which operates outside of Israel. 9/11, as I explained, was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad, where Ehud Emert and Bibi Netanyahu appear to have been the brain trust behind it. Among the targets for hostage seizures in Zionist-occupied Palestine, a.k.a. Israel, primary schools were favored by radical Palestinian extremists, a.k.a. patriots or terrorists, depending on one's point of view, conducting psychological warfare against Jewish settlers in the occupation. Given the potential risk, the good senator opted for precaution by locating the DHS experimental school in a nice Jewish neighborhood in his home state. The Parkland, Florida school shooting also occurred in a Yid zone, crawling with IDF volunteers, showing that maybe little is Israel, I think he means Israelis, are not really so safe as they are assumed to be by little ladies evicted by the high cost of resorting to New York and new exiles from their Yiddish homeland of Ukraine. The chief of DHS at the time, Janet Napolitano, carried out Lieberman's urging to Shin Bet eyes the American public school system, starting with the Sandy Hook School in Newtown, which was refitted with a chain-link fence around the grounds, electronic locks on the outer doors, surveillance cameras, a multi-channel communication system, and so on. The school was transformed into an impregnable fortress, or so the planners assume, failing to see the many flaws, for instance, accessed by former students and police officers. If you aim to penetrate a fortress, carry a badge. Let me say that whole paragraph seems to be complete nonsense. I know of no chain-link fence, no electronic locks, surveillance cameras, if they were installed, they didn't work, no multi-channel communication. The school had been abandoned at least by 2008. I'm getting understanding it may have been by 2006. So this was no impregnable fortress. This is just wrong. Meanwhile, it continues, rogue cops. On the day of the shooting, witnesses saw two large men behind the schoolyard running toward a back entrance. This was the most intriguing observation, soon thereafter suppressed from the official record and disregarded by the press and local police for reasons unstated. Were there intruders involved in the shooting? Where were they from? Why weren't they in contact with local and state police? What was their purpose? Logical questions never asked. Two rogue cops, each with a handgun, matches a supposed Lanza arsenal. It was a Glock and a Sig Sauer handguns, and of course supposed to be an AR-15, and they found a shotgun in the trunk of a car, but all this was staged. Newtown is located fairly close to the border with New York State. Geography can be important in a region as wealthy as Connecticut, where highway police keep a sharp eye on intruders from the Bronx and the Puerto Rican and Black Ghetto arriving in Bridgeport or New Haven. By contrast, Newtown is close to State Road 55, which offers scenic vistas absent of police surveillance across the swampy river into New York State with easy access to the Hudson Valley. As many readers found intriguing at the time, that neck of the woods was quite familiar to J.D. Salinger, the author of Catcher in the Rye, the story of a boy who wanted to catch children falling out of the sky from hitting the ground with a splat. It's also stomping grounds of the Yale Flyboys, who run a charity to send medical aid and secretly weapons to places like the Balkans and sub-Saharan Africa, like Ichabod Crane, Sleepy Hollow, Western Connecticut can be spooky. So who were those two headless horsemen? And by the way, there was an individual who was tracked through the woods and apprehended and put in a police car who said he had nothing to do with it. He was dressed in camouflage. Very mysterious, very odd. That was certainly off script. Maybe he was trying to blow the cover of the stage shooting that was about to take place, or had already taken place. This interstate geography was familiar to older New York State police officers who were then being demoted and facing early retirement due to the diversion of federal and state funding for law enforcement into the coffers of Homeland Security. Into the coffers of Homeland Security. New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg was a stickler for reducing fat by cost cutting. The downsizing of the NYPD was accomplished by disciplinary measures against normal practices, such as collecting payoffs from local business owners, dope dealers, and accident-prone taxi drivers at risk of losing their shields. Small change, really, at the street level, but it added up to a big budget for Director Napolitano. As men of honor, Irish cops in New York did not take this kind of garbage from ambitious politicians without turning the screws on their foes. What better way to get even with the liberal cokesuckers than raising Cain in Jewtown, a.k.a. Newtown? So at payback hour, two large men were spotted by a janitor charging out of the woods toward the back of the school, just like Washington Irving's headless horseman of Sleepy Hollow. With a model high-security school penetrated with devastating consequences, the DHS went into panic mode with an overblown cover-up. We'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Let me say, while I would have been glad to open the lines, Mitchell's not back. I can't take callers, but this article is still a good ways to go. What a mixed bag. I mean, listen, this guy is the heavyweight now at Rents.com, and he does a lot of good stuff. I've even republished pieces of his before. But something here, he's got this so wrong, I'm absolutely dumbfounded. I'll complete and then I'll offer extended commentary about what we have here. Where I left off. As men of honor, Irish cops in New York do not take this kind of garbage from ambitious politicians without turning the screws on their foes. What better way to get even with those liberal cokesuckers than Raising Cain in Jewtown, a.k.a. Newtown? So at payback hour, two large men were spotted by a janitor charging out of the wood toward the back of the school, just like Washington Irving's headless horseman at Sleepy Hollow. With a model high security school penetrated with devastating consequences, the DHS went into panic mode with an overblown cover-up. Lanza and his mom were the patsies, and freelance stringers for the Zionists were paid a lot of shekels to accuse distraught parents for being crisis actors to muddy any possibility of hard facts emerging. So there you are, Mr. Jones. It was so good of your Jewish wife to introduce us to the Shin Bet Shalom, father of the bride. Alex Jones is an agent of Zionism? The Anti-Defamation League ADM, a bunch of Yid wingers, complain about the InfoWars host's interviews with right-wing figures. No evidence could be dredged up to prove that he is a Jew-hating bigot to their chagrin. If anything, he was madly in love with a Jewess, at least until their divorce after an 8-year marriage. Mr. Jones' wife at the time of the Newtown job was a nice Jewish girl who loved pets so much that she eventually became a media executive for PETA. Cool. I'm all for vegan kibble for kitties, even though, like me, they'd rather have red meat and liver. Violet, a.k.a. Kelly Rebecca Nichols, is a big strapping Texan cowgirl who happens to have Jewish ancestry and also deserves a gold medal flower award for tossing a dead raccoon into the dinner plate of Anna Wintour at the Four Seasons in New York City. The devil wears coon skin. The alt-media scuttlebutt has long been that Violet has been Alex channeled to Israeli funding. She's smart, rich, and a Jewess, so anything's possible, be the ambassador from Tel Aviv. However, being a contrarian, my hunch is that the largest part of the family slush fund is from the CIA due to the legacy of Violet's late father, Edmund Lowe Nichols. The Lowe's being the German Jew side of the family in Throckmorton County, northern Texas. Ed Nichols was a brilliant man of many talents having worked as a professional level musician, journalist, and Texas Agriculture Commissioner. Then, during Jimmy Carter's term, he joined the branch of the U.S. Diplomatic Service in charge of agricultural trade and exchanges, installing him into the U.S. Senior Executive Service. The elite group of top-tier foreign policy officials ranked GS-15 or impossibly higher. That put him in the same league as ambassadors and leaders of European nations as an ultimate insider. I add as an aside, this is precisely the group that Trump has a plan called Schedule F to fire. His career path indicates Nichols to have been more than a mere sales minister, blessed corn and wheat and bales of cotton, being the top-level intelligence operative who systematically deployed food as a weapon. Eating is a more reliable way to convince populations and turn foreign governments than dropping the A-bomb, because as the old saying goes, you are what you eat. And there's no better way to start your day than a bowl of Wheaties. That's how the world became Americanized, through propaganda at the gut level. And the imbalance in world food production is why and how the USA won the Cold War. Nichols' first foreign assignment was Rome in 1979 in the wake of the Aldo Moro kidnapping and murder by the so-called Red Brigades, which was actually a hit squad from Operation Gladio, the CIA clandestine guerrilla force against the Soviet Union. The Moro affair prevented a planned coalition of his Christian Democrats and the Communist Party of Italy, which would have put Italy out of the shadow of American hegemony into the Soviet orbit. Actually, there was nothing in the way of foodstuffs that put Nichols into Italy, which is a massive producer and packager of top-quality edibles. The probable reasoning for this spy assignment was that the Jewish origin Nichols was a top-level Freemason who could hold secret talks with a spooky propaganda do P2 Lodge, which was involved with a de facto coup against Moro. After that dark business was done, he assigned to Copenhagen, Denmark, the choke point for monitoring the Soviet Baltic fleet, an approximate site of the recent underwater detonation of the Nord Stream pipeline. It was also the safest liaison hub for dealing with Scandinavia and the Baltics at the time. The agriculturally production nation of Finland was under de facto Soviet control, which had its pluses and minuses as a gateway to Leningrad, St. Petersburg. The other agency project was a secret support of Lech Walesa's nationalist and anti-Soviet Solidarność Union movement in Poland, in the Gdansk shipyard on the Baltic coast. As a productive agricultural nation, Poland was always open to talks with foreigners on its ability to supply food exports, the doorway into the prize of collapsing the Warsaw Pact. During Ronald Reagan's rollback of the Soviet Empire in the 1980s and 90s, Alex Jones' father-in-law was posted at the EU headquarters in Brussels, where he became the chief of the NATO Food and Agriculture Committee. There he set up a committee to plan emergency food provisions in the event of a nuclear war with the Soviet Union. His tour of Europe happened to coincide with massive crop failures in Russia and Ukraine, along with insect infestation of crops in Castro's Cuba. These were Texas-side disasters for the commies sourced in the good old USA. The Cold War had turned into a warmed-over baking contest with the starving Reds. A turning point came when President Mikhail Gorbachev was forced to pay cash, a.k.a. gold, for grain, depleting Moscow's coffers, which began a perestroika, gradually easing process that resulted in the collapse of the Soviet Union. In short, Alex Jones had married into a top-tier CIA family, which explains where he got the funding to start up InfoWars, since his wife, Nemes Nichols, came with a dowry of $3 million. Some dissenter indeed, Mr. Jones. Well done. Final section, a ton of bricks. So what explains a ton of bricks that just fell on his head? That is a David Copperfield delusion for the benefit of dummies in the audience. Alex is being officially decommissioned for a brief period before his next assignment if he's willing to accept it before the audio tape catches fire and explodes. Mission improbable awaits the fastest draw from Texas. Maybe he should learn a few tips from Tom Cruise on how to reach the next level as Top Gun. The excruciating show in the courtroom was morbid theater that Alex had to put behind him in order to move on. Now that I can see eye to eye with the A, I don't quite get this capital I with a capital A, thereby connecting the dots, CIA. It becomes clear that the vast slush fund will pay out any reparations to the aggrieved parents, putting Senator Joe Lieberman's fiasco finally to rest and relieving the shin bet of any residual guilt for their unprofessional failure at crisis management. Where next for the big boy? Staring into Johnny Carson's Plantour, I ask, what saith Karnak the Magnificent? Answer abracadabra. Ukraine, as a sidekick gone missing Hunter Biden, who can make a proposal to Burisma for a natural gas pipeline from Galveston to Odessa, the Gulf to Black Sea connection to replace Nord Stream with an endless energy belt. So let's raise glass shots of vodka to his future success. Whew! I need to wake up to an Irish coffee fast, because this saga of information warfare has been a nightmare. To put to sleep my memories of Connecticut, like a river canoe journey when I got a bad case of poison ivy infection during portage to a field of stinging nettles, meaning I need to quell any further thoughts about Infowar show trials for a brief moment before the man comes to delink the internet connection. So in parting, the situation recalls a couple of homophobic verses from Bob Dylan. And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? Wow. Let me say, this is a whole lot of malarkey wrapped around a total failure to understand what happened at Sandy Hook. I mean, I am unimpressed. This is bad stuff. I would say to this guy, Soshi Shimatsu, read the book. How can you do this without having actually read what happened at Sandy Hook? This is completely dumbfounding. I am really flabbergasted. And this is, I say, this is the heavy hitter. This is the heavy hitter at Rents.com. The heavy hitter at Rents.com who doesn't have a clue of what happened at Sandy Hook. I'm pretty embarrassed by this. I truly am. Let me give you some better insights that came from Robert Barnes, who's actually in the classroom. Actually, in the courtroom, Barnes observed when he was in the first trial in Austin that it was unlike any courtroom he'd ever seen before, that there were three cameras at work, one of which was focused on the jury, that it looked to him like a made-for-TV movie. I think he's got it exactly right. Exactly right. A made-for-TV movie. And Alex Jones is playing the key role. Here's some aspects of the way in which this has been staged. In a recent interview with David Ferhite, Viva Fry, Barnes provides the best explanation of what's going on. Let me mention some of the parts. Barnes. Alex Jones almost never denied Sandy Hook happened on his show. He answered two callers' questions. It wasn't tied to any advertising at all at any time. Why is Jones not allowed to explain this in court? None of his financial success had anything to do with Sandy Hook. The main evidence is two things. Over 99% of everything InfoWars published and broadcast actually said Sandy Hook happened. Sandy Hook coverage was less than 1% of all coverage during the time frame. Those are critical facts that tell you he made money or not. If you imputed value to it, this would be a 1,000th of 1%. The plaintiffs have all his financial information, the dates he made those statements, and you could tie it in as profiting. So why haven't they? Because if you review this info, and I have, he didn't make money. Sandy Hook was a net loser for Jones. They can't show any connection that Jones made money off it. In fact, when you look at the details, challenging Sandy Hook cost him money, and it cost him supporters. Are these facts not coming out? Because Judge Bella said Jones cannot tell the jury how little he covered Sandy Hook. He cannot tell the jury how he didn't make money off Sandy Hook. He cannot tell the jury how it cost him more than it helped him. He cannot tell the jury how 99% of InfoWars coverage said Sandy Hook happened. They have to build a lie for the jury to buy in order to get a big check for things that don't even relate to compensatory damages. The plaintiffs are allowed to present all the evidence that suggests he's rich and famous off of Sandy Hook. But Jones is not allowed to explain he's in bankruptcy, didn't make money off Sandy Hook, and hardly ever covered it. Why not be allowed to say this in front of the jury? Because the truth would lead to a low verdict. This is a fake case about supposedly fake news. You have a corrupt judge and a rogue ambulance chasing plaintiff's lawyer, trying to tell a lie to the world with the help of liberals like Elizabeth Williamson of the New York Times, who is a real person who has grifted and made money off Sandy Hook. You know who the biggest money makers are off of Sandy Hook? The media. The media knows every time they glamorize a mass shooter that it increases the probability of another mass shooting. And the media want it to happen because they line their pockets with it. And the Democrat politicians in Connecticut, allied with this corrupt court system and lawyers, also make political gain off it because it's their excuse to take away everybody's guns. I think that's exactly right. And if you want to learn more, go to my blog now, jameshbetzer.org. Don't forget the H. Because remember, the legal fiction Lenny Posner took my blog and even the book. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous what's happened here. Taking my blog and the book in order to, you know, satisfy the monetary judgment, except that in Wisconsin, you can only satisfy a monetary judgment, in this case, the $450,000. By means of a monetary award. A book and a blog are intellectual property. They are not monetary awards. In order to convert them into money, therefore, under Wisconsin law, you must appoint a receiver. And the receiver then takes bids on the book and the blog. Now, since the legal fiction Leonard Posner spent all his time declaring that the book was defamatory and that it ought not to be in print, that he even made a settlement with a publisher who agreed to no longer publish the book, under a doctrine known as a judicial estoppel, he's actually precluded from benefiting from a law case he brought where he prevailed and on the same facts now wants to reverse himself in order to benefit. He's precluded from doing that. So the Wisconsin court in this instance not only violated Wisconsin statutes in the taking by directly giving the blog and the book to this legal fiction Leonard Posner, and I've insisted from the very beginning from my original answer to the original complaint that this was a legal fiction, that this was not, in fact, someone named Leonard Posner, but another party by the name of Reuben Wagner, and I was consistent about that. When they wanted to do a DNA comparison between what they claimed was a blood sample from the deceased son which was not in the proper repository under Connecticut law, with Leonard Posner, I protested that because the decedent, Noah Posner, was actually a fabrication made out of photographs of his actual son, Michael Vabner, when he was a child, which I've proven on multiple grounds, including a superposition where you see Noah Posner turn into Michael Vabner, or more appropriately, Michael Vabner revert to his childhood as Noah Posner, another legal fiction. So there would be a DNA match between the purported plaintiff calling himself Leonard Posner and the purported deceased son Noah, because since Noah is actually Michael, and since Leonard Posner is actually Reuben Vabner, who's the real biological father of Michael, of course there'd be a match. So I propose expanding the DNA testing to include Leonard Posner, Noah Posner, Reuben Vabner, Michael Vabner. But of course, that would have blown the whole case apart, so it was denied. Indeed, there must have been as many as 80 different motions I made for one purpose or another that were denied or not satisfied in order to produce this verdict against me based upon the faulty summary judgment methodology in Wisconsin that I invited the Supreme Court to clean up by way of my petition. And just to show you how significant this would have been and why it's indefensible that they denied my petition, it turned out that during the trial for taking, where I was making arguments about the violation of my right to a jury trial, they actually, the plaintiff, the legal fiction, the legal team for the legal fiction of Leonard Posner, argued that the Seventh Amendment does not apply to the states, but only to federal cases and in federal courts, which dumbfounded me, but led to research to establish that by a series of historical peculiarities, the Supreme Court has never actually affirmed that the Seventh Amendment right to a trial by jury does apply to all 50 of the states. Through my research, I discovered there is a case affirming that it applies to Puerto Rico, which is only a territory. And if it applies to Puerto Rico, obviously it must apply to the 50 states, but they've never formally ruled upon it. So what I did was to set it up to give them the perfect opportunity to not only clean up these improper summary judgment procedures that apparently now apply not only in Wisconsin, but also in Massachusetts, I'm affirmed, by someone who knows the score there. But it's ridiculous because it makes it also objective, and it's, you know, compromising the right to a trial by jury of every resident of Wisconsin and of Massachusetts. Where I use Texas as a contrast case, as one of the criteria for Supreme Court taking a case is that it represents a conflict between the highest courts of two different states. Well, that we have here in spades. If you want to learn what actually happened at Sandy Hook, then I cannot recommend Rents.com or Yoshi Shimatsu, who seems to be befuddled. He does not understand what happened. This was a FEMA drill. Sophia Smallstrom was the first to call it out as a capstone event. It involves a whole community. The community was drawn in. They carefully selected the players. They had individual contracts with the government. They were paid. They have a lot of fringe benefits, including not paying taxes. They wanted to continue. I'm just astonished that Yoshi Shimatsu appears to have not even read the book. And if you want to learn what's going on, I say go to my blog, not jamesfetzer.org. You'll find that directs you to various documents in the case, which I'm now pursuing, by the way. If anyone wants to know if I'm continuing to persevere, I am. I've submitted a notification of an appeal of this taking order that gave the blog and the book to the Leonard Posner legal fiction. And the timing was exquisite. because on the July 27th, I was publishing articles about Sandy Hook and the trial and how Alex Jones was calling it out as a show trial. And on the 28th, when they first began attacking me by name, they took the blog. So that while they were very firm to me, they had a communication between Paul Joseph Watson and AJ, where a producer read describing Paul J. Watson telling AJ, we got to stay as far as possible away from that batshit crazy Fetzer. Well, if they wanted to learn what that batshit crazy Fetzer had to say and went to jamesfetzer.org, they'd find it had been diverted to Posner versus Fetzer lawsuit documents, even in incomplete file, because they're practicing the method of selection and elimination themselves. It's all outrageous. I'm doing my best to clean it up. But when I tee it up for the Supreme Court and they decline, something is wrong. Something is wrong. I mean, can it be that the entire judicial system of the United States, just as the Department of Justice and the FBI has been weaponized politically? Can it be these forces have control of even the United States Supreme Court? I've been loath to accept that conclusion. But I got to tell you, the evidence before me is profoundly disturbing. Let me just say to all of you out there how much I appreciate your interest, your participating. Revolution Radio deserves your support. They're doing a great job. They really, truly do believe in freedom of speech, as do I, and I'm doing my best to ensure it. Freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and upholding our rights to a jury trial under the 7th and 14th Amendment. Thanks for being here today. Spend as much time as you can with family and friends and people you love. We do not know how much time we have left.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence